What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mr. Movie. I'm your host, as always, Josh Bergman, and today I have my co-host, Jeff Bergman. He is back. Jeff, how you doing?
Doing good, Mr. Movie. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm excited because this has been the moment we've been waiting for 7-8 months at this point. This is our Oscars episode. We've been talking about the Oscars since September. What's gonna get nominated? Who's gonna win? Who's gonna get snubbed? And this is it. This is the moment. In this episode, we're gonna be talking about the Oscar front runner for Best Picture right now, Nomadland. In addition, we are gonna be making our 2021 Oscars predictions, in which we're gonna go through all 23 categories and putting our predictions to see what is correct, what's gonna happen. I'm very intrigued about this season because even making this list, I did not know, but I'm excited. How are you feeling about this?
Well, many people don't know, but you know, we have a family Oscar pool generally every year, and Josh always wins. So if you want to win your office Oscar pool, this is the episode you've been waiting for because Josh is going to predict. How many awards are there?
They're 23. Usually they're 24. But I'll get into a bit later, but now they're on
the 23. Oh, they mix, they sound... The
sound is together now.
Right. So Josh will correctly pick at least, I'm
20.
Predicting, 20 correct tonight.
Usually in the past, I've gotten around 20 out of 24, 21 out of 24. But I'm telling you, doing this list, I went, oh God, these could go anywhere. But we'll get into that later after we talk about Nomadland. But before we do that, Dad, there's some news in the world, in the movie world, some positive and some negative. Let's get to the negative first. It was just announced yesterday that ArcLight Cinemas and Pacific Theaters are closing due to the COVID-19 pandemic. For those of you who do not know, ArcLight, the major brand, is the quintessential movie theater chain in Los Angeles. It is, in a way, the more elite theater chain where they always have the special occasions. They have Q&A with the filmmakers. There's the Cinerama Dome in Los Angeles on, what's the street?
I don't know if it's on Hollywood Boulevard or, you know, Sunset or, yeah.
They've had so many classic, famous theaters that after a year of being closed, they announced that they will not be reopening. And the question is, there is a lot of ArcLight theaters, including the famous Cinerama Dome that personally I've not gone to. I really want to go to. But the question is, will these theaters be bought out? Who should buy them out? Will Netflix, now that the Paramount law has been taken away, in which movie studios can actually buy and operate their own movie theater chains now, or movie theaters themselves, will Netflix or Amazon be buying one of these, or will just AMC or Regal take them over? It's very sad for a lot of cinephiles and movie-going experienced people in Los Angeles, because it's a big part of the culture. Jeremy, previous guest host, my brother, your son, has... It's like a second home for him, I would say. What are you feeling about all this?
It's very sad. I've enjoyed the ArcLight. We went to see Skyfall in Hollywood. We saw 13 going on 30 at the ArcLight. But we love the ArcLight. Jeremy and we went to see, what won Best Picture last year?
Oh, Parasite.
Parasite. We saw Parasite at the ArcLight in West Hollywood last year, and we saw Peter Gallagher there.
If you're in Los Angeles and in the past couple of years and you want to see a movie, these theaters are really the place to go. I was looking through my ticket collection book, and I've had 4 experiences at an ArcLight. Skyfall, that I can remember. Skyfall, opening day with you, 2012, in one of the first rows. Turbo, with Uncle Scott and my younger cousins. The DreamWorks animated Ryan Reynolds snail movie at Sherman Oaks. And then in 2018, in D.C. at the ArcLight, I went to a screening of Blockers with my friend Cameron Kushner.
I didn't know they opened up an ArcLight in Washington.
Yeah, in that mall, we went to, not Tyson's, but when you came freshman year, we got food at a food court. It was in that complex. And then also my most recent, in my summer of Los Angeles, 2019, I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood at the Sherman Oaks on 35mm film. It's all the theaters from my memory. They look cool. They care about film. Was it a bit overpriced? Yeah, but very sad that it's gone, and I don't know what's going to happen. I want to go to the Cinerama Dome. Hopefully I can, if I ever go back to Los Angeles and someone buys it, I will definitely be going.
Yeah, I think someone will buy it. Again, once they file bankruptcy or they're going to close, that means that you can buy the company at a discount because you don't have to buy all the debt that they have. So I think somebody will buy the ArcLight.
And also, now that the theaters have closed, it's a bit strange because their, you know, movie-going business has been on the slow up and up recently. And with that has movie release dates shuffling, which means we are in the latest segment of the Schedule Shuffle. Do the shuffle. Woo! Do the shuffle. Yes, there's some, the major, last Friday, the major reshuffling was due to Paramount Pictures, but before we go into Paramount slate, there was one bit of news that I thought you would really enjoy, in which The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard, the sequel to the Ryan Reynolds Samuel Jackson film, it was slated for August 2020.
I didn't even know there was going to be a sequel.
There's a sequel, well, they, it was slated for August 2020, pushed to August 2021, and I think it was a week or two ago, they moved it up to June 16th, the Wednesday, 2021. Father's Day weekend, and just today they released the first trailer.
Who's playing the Hitman Bodyguard's wife?
Well, it was Selma Hayek. She's returning. In the movie, it's Ryan Reynolds, Selma Hayek, Samuel Jackson, Morgan Freeman's in this movie, and Antonio Banderas, all on the poster. The trailer came out in which, I don't want to spoil the plot of what happens if you haven't watched the trailer, but it is edited to the song Hit Me Baby One More Time by Britney Spears.
Really?
I just, watching that, I thought, this is classic Ryan Reynolds. Great, I'm excited for it. So that has moved up 2 months to mid-June. I'm excited about
that. I'm pumped for that.
And now, onto the sad news, because Paramount Pictures, their biggest delay that kind of was the catalyst for everything that happened, Top Gun Maverick, from Independence Day 2020 to then eventually Independence Day 2021, has been pushed once again to November 19th, 2021.
That makes no sense.
Well, it's funny that we said that, because I would say, why are they doing that? Because theaters are opening back up. Right before we recorded this, right before we started, there was an article published by Deadline that Tom Cruise is planning for a humongous worldwide press tour. Like, he wants to do something big, so when more countries are open, when COVID has hopefully settled down by that point, that he can then do that. Which, in that makes sense.
Yeah, if he wants to do a worldwide thing, definitely, you know, COVID will be settled down before then in the United States, I believe. But yes, the world seemed to be the worse off than we are, so, I mean, a lot of the world, Latin America, Europe.
Australia is still doing great.
New Zealand's doing well. China and the Asian countries are doing well. So
yeah, but because of this, some films had to get reshuffled. Mission Impossible 7, which was slated for November 2021, which is now Top Gun, that film has been pushed back to May 2022 on the 26th anniversary around from the first Mission Impossible film. And then because of that, Mission Impossible 8, which is being filmed very close to number 7, released for November 2022, has been pushed to July 7th, 2023. And then with that, with the Independence Day slot now open, The Forever Purge, the fifth and apparently final film in the Purge franchise, was moved up just a week from July 9th to July 2nd, the only film going to be released that weekend from Universal.
Well, I was hoping they would purge the Purge franchise, but I guess it's back for more.
Hopefully, this will be the last one. I think if they finish it off and do well on this one, it will be a nice little five-film franchise. But beyond that, in a surprising happier news, G.I. Joe Snake Eyes, the Henry Golding spinoff film for the G.I. Joe franchise, which hasn't had a film since 2013, slated for October 22nd of this year, has been moved up to July 23rd of 2021. Now, I'm not saying that the film was test screened in October and someone may have seen it, but if that was so in case, I'm intrigued to see how this film will do, because I think this could do rather well if marketed right. But July is getting really crowded. And also because of that, Jackass, there's a new Jackass film that was going to come out Labor Day, has taken that October 22nd slot. And in addition to that, The Bee Gees, there's a movie about The Bee Gees directed by Kenneth Branagh, has been announced for November 2022. Apparently there's a new Star Trek film. Don't know if it's starring the cast of Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto. Don't know if J.J. Abrams is attached, but that's been announced for June 2023. And also a John Krasinski written, directed, and starring film, as well as Ryan Reynolds, in which one of them can see imaginary friends and like has to save the souls of imaginary friends. Pretty much John Krasinski and Ryan Reynolds are in a film together coming out November 2023. What are your thoughts on some of these releases?
I don't know. There's so many. I lost control. I lost track.
All right. I'm sorry about that. G.I. Joe Snake Eyes moving up 2 months.
No marketing. I don't see how it's going to be any good. Sounds like a January movie to me.
Jackass from Labor Day to October.
It'll do the same no matter where it's released.
Bee Gees film, Kenneth Branagh. This is coming off of the Queen biopic.
Should be good.
Elton John.
Yeah, probably.
New Star Trek film after 7 years since Star Trek Beyond from 2016.
If they have a new spin on it, or like, you know, do something.
Would you not want the original from J.J. Abrams first?
I want the cast to return, and I'd like to have them go through the original Star Trek TV shows and pick like an iconic story and do something similar to one of the iconic stories.
You're saying that,
so that the fans would really get a kick out of
it. You're saying that you do not want them to recreate one of their most famous movies. As in Khan.
No. No, but Khan was from the original TV show. They should do similar to that, where they should take a character, a famous character from one of the TV shows, a great storyline, and expand on it and do something like that. Because I think that would be more interesting than, well, the Khan that they did. It was so silly. Yeah, so that's what I would do.
And then John Krasinski, written and directed film starring him and Ryan Reynolds about one of them trying to save imaginary friends.
Sounds like as punchy and cheeky as his COVID news show. So yeah, sounds good.
Awesome. And with that out of the way, hopefully we get to see a lot of these movies very soon and theaters will be saved and a lot of studios make money. But beyond that, it is time for the film of the week, Nomadland. Currently, this is the front runner for Best Picture right now at the Oscars. And this film's been around, it feels like it's been around since forever. And I feel like in a way it's been poorly timed, because this film came out in a way at the Venice Film Festival in which it was received the Golden Lion, one of the most prestigious awards. And everyone said, oh, this film is one to look out for the Oscars. That was in September. This was the first film that I felt everyone said, look at this for the Oscars. And then to the public, it then came out late February, one of the last films. So just on that aspect, it was extremely painful waiting for this film, given all the great buzz. But this film is directed by Chloe Zhao, who is up and coming directing Eternals, which has already been filmed, Marvel's new film. If it ever comes out, it's supposed to come out this November.
Another way that Marvel has ruined a great director. According to your brother.
We'll see about that. But also this film stars Frances McDormand as Fern, a woman who in post-2008 of the recession is now technically a nomad, in which she is not homeless. She is just houseless. She lives in a van and pretty much travels around the country doing her annual stops, making friends, making memories, and doing some quick pickup work along the way. And as I said, frontrunner for Best Picture. We are 2 weeks away from the Oscars coming out. This film has been, this is the film. What did you think of Nomadland with all the hype? And also, this film came out to us on Hulu and theaters in February. We saw this in Hulu, and it actually was released in IMAX a couple weeks before that. So with all of that out of the way, what did you think of Nomadland?
Well, I could see why it's so critically acclaimed, because it deals with the subject of the age group that I'm sort of going into, which is the post over 55, between over 55 and being retired, or people who are retired, where people end up losing their jobs because their salaries are too high. Or after the recession, all these places close, and now you have this group of people, these baby boomers, who can't afford to live in a house because the housing is so expensive. So now they're forced to pursue this nomad life, which I knew nothing about. And that part of it I thought was very fascinating, how these people are resorting to a life that, you know, people had lived many years ago. Listen, it was beautifully shot, and it was interestingly done because there aren't many actors in the movie other than Frances McDormand and David Strathairn. And so there's a lot of like regular people in the movie.
Some of those regular people include Swanky and Linda May.
Yeah, and so the fact that Chloe was able to get these people to perform on camera was pretty amazing. And the fact that she was able to shoot and create a story and film it in all these locations around these regular people, I just thought was kind of fascinating. Now, was it the best picture of the year? No, it wasn't. But that's just me. But it's a meaningful picture. So I think, I don't know, that's why people love it so much.
It does seem like it has all the ingredients for, in a way, an Oscar-baity film. You got Frances McDormand, who is already an Academy Award winner. You got beautiful cinematography. You got the right age group. You have the story of, you know, moving on, and it's kind of relevant, but also examining a unique world, as you were mentioning with nomads. Like, I didn't know anything about this stuff and how important their cars are for them, of what Fern has to go through with her truck. It's definitely a unique story. Even if it's Frances doing Frances McDormand, still is a dedicated performance that you, in a way, feel bad, but also know that she likes it, because, not really spoilers, but in the film, it revolves at least a year, because you see her celebrating New Year's alone. And, like, it's kind of a sad moment, but she likes it, so, or at least that's what we're able to assume. So it's kind of, it makes you reflect on yourself, and also the lesson of there's no goodbyes, it's just see you later down the road. It can definitely strike a chord for a lot of people, but I'll admit it's not my personal favorite of the best pictures. I think that the entire story, especially where it leads in its last scene and the message of it's not goodbye, it's see you later, I don't think the movie was really building towards that. So that's where I'm kind of mixed on with the story itself. I don't really think the story was up to the par of what maybe I was expecting or just other best picture films from this year.
Well, you know, it's just different. It's not like it was like high drama where it was like a Silence of the Lambs or American Beauty or some of these other, if you think of all the movies that have won Best Picture over the years, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. But again, the drama didn't build up to a point. It was sort of just like her story and following her around and like what she has to do to survive and, you know, decisions she makes, people she meets, and whether she pursues the love interest or doesn't pursue the love interest. It was just more like a real life type movie, but was it Best Picture of the Year quality? It's not what I would go for, but I can see why people are going for it.
Well, do you think that overall this film is not it's interesting, but do you think that the movie personally kept you engaged of like, I want to see what's going to happen to Fern?
Yes.
Were you drifting off?
I was drifting off a little bit. I don't know. How are you? I mean,
we also watched this like almost 2 months ago. From memory, I think it had a good strong first 40 minutes where I'm like, yeah, let's do this. And then when it started to get a bit repetitive of her going to this spot, then a little bit of something goes wrong, and then this spawn, then she even sees her sister, and she kind of gets back to, in a way, normal society. I thought, all right. And then by the final scene, I was just kind of, I wasn't all in by the end, which just, I feel like that the hype, as I was saying, because this was the first real lookout for this film and one of the last that we've seen. And so I think that hype kind of killed the film for me. And not killed, but damaged it in a certain way. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, I agree. From an acting standpoint, you know, Frances McDormand, she was the same character she was in Three Billboards
Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Yeah. I felt she was the same person. So I don't think, or she was almost, not the same person as in Almost Famous, but I mean, she was herself. So from an acting standpoint, did she go out of her comfort zone? Did she do anything like spectacular? You know, she, again, it was not my type of best picture.
If it makes a difference, when I was doing my research, Chloe Zhao and Frances McDormand, for the 4 months that they filmed, they lived in vans for the entire duration. Not saying I'm trying to say this is why it's great, but just, you know, dedication from performance and especially director. That's some good stuff right there. You know, I wouldn't want to do it.
It's kind of like the movie with Emil Hirsch when he...
Which one?
When he lived in the van in the wilderness.
I have no...
Or the movie with... What's her name when she was hiking the Pacific Trail?
Wild? With Reese Witherspoon?
Yeah.
Is the other one Into the Wild?
Yeah, maybe. I forgot the name.
I think I watched that one. I did not see Wild, but...
But it's kind of the same type of thing. I would say it's very similar to Wild.
Yeah.
Where it's like an introspective person and you're dealing with a community of people, like this hiking community where they just, people just go up the Pacific Trail and end up at this town in Oregon and all this stuff. And again, not my idea of a best picture.
So... As I was mentioning before, in a weird situation because this was distributed by Searchlight, previously known as Fox Searchlight, which is technically now Disney. From what I understand from their contracts, they should not have been legally able to put this on Hulu, but for some reason they probably paid some money and was able to get Nomadland on Hulu the same day as theaters nationwide. So this was released in IMAX and then in theaters and Hulu on the same day. We watched this on Hulu. Were you fine with that? Do you think this would have been better
seeing it?
No,
probably
been
better off seeing it in the theater on a big screen with all the, if you like the scenery of the West and stuff like that.
There were some beautiful shots. Also, like just the timing, because I'm pretty sure there were some great sunset shots.
Yeah.
And like the fact that they had to get that all together on the moment, because you can't recreate a sunset.
You know, and the scenes at the Badlands National Park in South Dakota were very nice. But again, we were watching it on the TV, so.
It was not as up to scale. But overall, who or what would you say was the star of the film? The one thing you can take away saying this was great.
I think the people, the other people.
Swanky
and just the regular people that she met all across the her travels. I thought they were the winning, you know, they were the most interesting part of the movie.
For me, I don't know, this one's tough because off the top, as we mentioned with the cinematography, Joshua James Richards, I love great cinematography. I thought that, as we were saying, the shots with the desert, huge landscapes, the sunsets, they're beautiful. But then doing my research with Chloe Zhao, who, as I said, not only did she get these great performances out of these normal people, these nomad people, but she also stayed lived in a truck for 4 months during the filming, and also by the end of filming, she was then getting ready for Eternals with the pre-production on top of this film. So I just think she did a lot. So I don't know, this is tough. This one's tough. I might have to give it two-handed to both Joshua James Richards and Chloe Zhao.
Good choices. So I think people have to help Chloe Zhao with her outfits.
You don't think her outfits so far been good?
I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do the Oscars. I think they're inviting people to the theater.
They are. I was going to get into it.
But I think she's got to hopefully come up with an interesting dress.
We'll see. And final question, how would you rank this on the nut scale? Would you give this an almond, walnut, a cashew, or the almighty peanut?
I would give it a cashew.
I would also give this a cashew. I think just story is not up to what I am looking for in a film that makes me go, wow, based on a story. But I love the heart behind it and a lot of the reality within what the crew had to go through. And then also, you know, Swanky and Linda May. MVP right there. And before we go into our Oscar predictions, Dad, as I said, this was released in theaters in a very weird format, so I got some box office numbers.
No way!
They are not as accurate as I wanted to because Disney, for some reason, they're not releasing dailies, so I don't know how the movie's doing on a daily-to-daily business. They didn't release the IMAX numbers directly, so I don't really know the truth. But what I did find out is that on its opening weekend in which it was released in theaters as well as Hulu, it grossed $500,000 in around 1,175 theaters. Not the best. Even in COVID times, that's not the best. But there wasn't really a big simultaneous release.
Right,
like
but the New York
before.
And LA theaters weren't open then, so.
Also true. I totally forgot about that. The New York and LA theaters were not open. And since mid-February, almost 2 months now, domestically overall, it has grossed $2.8 million. It's fine. I mean, the movie only cost $5 million to make, and it's worldwide made just over $5 million. And with probably the Hulu deal, and it's about to be on video on demand and rental the Tuesday after the Oscars, so you can rent it there if you haven't seen it, or have Hulu. It's probably going to make its money back, but just saying, not the biggest moneymaker. And if it wins Best Picture, I'm pretty sure it will be the lowest grossing Best Picture film. But on that note, let's get right into it, in which we here are going to be making our Oscars 2021 predictions. There are 23 categories. Some of these categories, we have seen every film, and some of these, we haven't seen a single one of them. But we are so excited, and let's get right into it. Now, the Oscars in the last couple of years have just had an identity crisis. And since the 2019 Oscars, the whole Kevin Hart host situation, they haven't had a host the last 2 years, and this year they are continuing not having a host. So before we do any of the predictions, who, if you could, on the top of your head, who would you want to be the host for the 2021 Oscars?
I would go Will Ferrell, John Stamos.
Has to be someone, I think it has to really be someone that is, in a way, universally beloved, but also one of many talents.
Nikki Glaser.
Nikki Glaser!
Yeah!
Nikki Glaser, we just watched your roasts, you hosting the roasts episodes. I like Nikki Glaser.
Yeah, she'd be great. She'd be hilarious. She'd be snarky. Any funny Eddie Murphy? I don't know.
Eddie Murphy would... Well, ooh, there was 1 year, I remember, there was 1 year he was supposed to. I think it was 2012, but there was something with Brett Ratner that he dropped out. Mm. I forget the specifics. For me, I was thinking... I mean, I would still say Kevin Hart could potentially be good, but that will get enough backlash. The Rock can't really sing, but he has, you know, charisma.
Yeah, but he's not interesting. He's not funny, I don't think.
What about Tiffany Haddish?
No. I don't like Tiffany Haddish. I don't think she's funny.
Well, those were my only two, like, let's do this. The Rock or Tiffany Haddish. All right, well, that's just sad.
I'd go Kenan, maybe, but, you know.
I don't think Kenan Thompson's big enough that, like, he can do the Oscars.
Well, it's an ABC. It's on ABC, correct?
Yeah.
So, they would...
I don't want Jimmy Kimmel again.
I would go Kimmel. Kimmel's great.
He's fine, but he already did it twice, and, like, wasn't the best.
Is there anybody else on ABC, like, any on the ABC shows? That is really funny. You know, Anthony Anderson, maybe.
Oh, I could see Anthony.
If they had Anthony and, what's her name?
Tracy Ellis Ross. I could see that as a good combo.
That'd be funny.
That would be good. All right, let's name it. The 2021 Oscars are hereby hosted by Anthony Anderson and Tracy Ellis Ross from Black-ish. Now, kind of as you were mentioning before, the will this be virtual in person? They actually announced that everyone is going to be, all the nominees will be in person. And they won't do virtual. You can't Skype in unless you're international. And they have some international hubs, I'm pretty sure, in which that you can Skype into the Oscars. You can fact check me on that, audience. I'm pretty sure that's what's going to be happening, which I'm excited for.
So that means people are going to be in the Kodak Theater?
All right.
And they're going to walk up like a normal thing, but just not going to be any extra people.
That's why I think it'll be like the Grammys. Because even though the Grammys was outside, I'm pretty sure this will be inside. But 2 months later, month and a half later, more vaccinations. But I'm excited to see the outfits, the dresses, just people mingling. Mm-hmm. Hopefully there'll be a good red carpet. I'm excited for that.
Interesting.
All right. Now, are you ready for the moment of truth?
Yes.
Oscar nominations.
I'm going to beat you this year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
We'll see about that.
Wait, but this is no good. This is going to ruin our own contest, but I know all your answers.
Honestly, though, I can change a lot of these within the next 2 weeks. Anything can happen. So, also, these are not... I mean, I try to put my heart and soul into these, but these are technically not official. There are some more awards going around. The BAFTAs were just this week that we're going to get a bit into. Anything can change. So, in a way, while I try to make sure these were the real winners... something had happened. Let's start off with live action short film. Was this the one that you watched the other night?
Yes.
All right. So you watched all five of these. You
yes.
and Mom. I have not seen a single one. You got Two Distant Strangers, Feeling Through, The Letter Room, The Present, and White Eye. One of these has Oscar Isaac, doesn't it?
Yes. They? Yes. That's the one where The Letter Room.
All right.
He plays a prison guard who reads all the letters before they go.
So, since I guess you're the expert in this category, who do you think will win this category?
All right. So, this is very hard. There was one that's on Netflix that you can actually watch. And that was the one, it was the short, was involved with a African-American guy who's trying to leave this apartment of a girl that he was with. And it's he gets caught in a time loop. And
ooh.
And I think that is probably the strongest one of these movies. I think it was Feeling Through. Now, there was one. The first one we saw was about a palace. It was a Palestinian movie, and it was about a guy taking his daughter to buy a refrigerator, and he was crossing the border into Israel and coming back. And it was just the story of kind of what his life is about, which was a good movie. I don't think it's going to win, though. The one that Mom really liked was Two Distant Strangers, and it was about a guy who was a young African-American kid who's just sort of out one night, and he runs into a deaf mute.
Yeah.
And then how they get along the rest of the night.
That's cool.
That she really liked. The Letter Room with Oscar Isaac, we liked it. It was okay. I wouldn't say it was our favorite.
So who would you say out of the five?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, Feeling Through is the movie with the blind and deaf mute. And the African-American guy. The Present is the movie with the Palestinian gentleman. Two Distant Strangers is the one with the kid who's stuck in a time loop. I think that's going to win because it does have a BLM theme to it. And it was probably the best made of the five. But your mother really loved Feeling Through.
So what you going to pick?
I'm going to go Two Distant Strangers. That's who I would go with.
Well, as someone who has not seen that one, I cannot comment. When I tried to do my quick research, a lot of people said The Letter Room looked good.
It may, because Oscar Isaac's in it, so maybe.
So I pick Letter Room. I have not seen any of these, so this is a blind guess.
Okay.
Did you have any like, oh, where was this short film?
I don't watch short films. I don't know.
All right, then. Moving on to the next one. Animated short film. The five nominations are If Anything Happens, I Love You, Opera, Burrow, Genius Loki, and Yes People.
Well, I haven't seen any of these, so I will revert to you.
All right, so I've seen two of these. If Anything Happens, I Love You, which is a very unique animated short film, which is on Netflix. It's about a school shooting. It's not the most upbeat film, but it had a lot of buzz on Twitter, and it is emotionally effective. And Burrow is the other one I saw. It is the animated Pixar short film that was connected with Soul. It is on Disney Plus. Personally, I really enjoyed Burrow more than If Anything Happens, I Love You, but I think that the theme of school shooting, the animation design, If Anything Happens, I Love You, I think that'll take the Oscar. So I'm going If Anything Happens, I Love You. It is streaming now on Netflix.
I will go with the other one.
With Burrow?
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we got visual effects. The nominations are Tenet, The Midnight Sky, Mulan, The One and Only Ivan, and Love and Monsters. I believe you've only seen, we've talked about two of them on the show, Tenet and Midnight Sky. What you going for?
Oh, Tenet by far. And they did stuff in that movie that I've never seen before. It's not even a choice.
I am also going to go Tenet. I think this is no competition. Were there any films that you were surprised? Where was this?
God, oh.
It was Wonder Woman, Birds of Prey. What other? Greyhound was visual effects heavy. Or do you think these films are right.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see Mulan, the one and only. I mean, Love and Monsters. Yeah, there had to have been some movies that we saw in the fall that had better visual effects than these, but doesn't matter.
Tenet will win no matter what. Yeah. I would say the only one that, where is this? The Invisible Man. I have hyped it up before. There's one extreme kitchen scene that if you look at the behind the scenes, you just think, wow, how the hell did they film that? Once again, Invisible Man on HBO Max. Great film. Next up, we got sound. Now, we kind of hinted at this before, in which usually the sound category is split up into two categories, best sound editing and best sound mixing. I don't want to go into what makes the two of them different, but I guess that's kind of the point, because even the members of the sound committee said, there's too much similarity at this point. Let's just combine them, which is why there are 23 nominations this year. So for best sound, the nominations are...
Oh, I have an idea.
What?
What new award should we do to replace it, and so we can have 24 awards again?
I was thinking about this. It's tough, because watching the BAFTAs this week, I love Best Newcomer. Seeing a fresh face get excited about winning is great. Best First Film, I think, is another great award. And then also Best Stunts. I think that's an important category that, after Mission Impossible Fallout, has not been acknowledged. I think it should. So, if anything, I would add all three. So I can't, is there one that you think this one needs to be here?
Best food at the,
best catering?
Best catering. Best key grip, best boy.
Best boy. That is 100% it. The best boy is always the best person on the list of credits. Oscars, we're telling you, best boy. Put it in for next year's award show. But going back to best sound, the nominations are Sound of Metal, News of the World, Greyhound, Mank, and Soul. What do you think is going to win? You've seen all five.
This is very hard. I don't think Mank will win.
Mank!
Just standard stuff. News of the World. It's just a Western. There wasn't anything great about the sound. Greyhound, you know, was a war movie with subs and boats. And I would imagine they were, I can't really remember the sound that well. But Sound of Metal.
It has it in the name.
You know, because it has the whole thing where it's the lack of sound that is interesting about Sound of Metal, when he, you know, he's the guy who's going deaf, and the scenes where he can't hear, you know, they have to do precisely, and those are kind of cool. And then, you know, Soul, I mean, it's Pixar. The sounds are always great at Pixar.
That's true.
So I'm gonna go Sound of Metal.
I will also go Sound of Metal. I think this is one of the shoo-ins for the award, because I remember watching this Christmas evening. The thing that hooked me was how intense the sound design was, of the ringing in the ear mixed with the music that he played, and then everything with him losing sound. It was great. So, Sound of Metal. Maybe Tenet was snubbed. That's the only one I could really think of, you know, with going backwards and forwards, the sound effects that would come about that. But yeah, best sound, Sound of Metal. You heard it here first, folks. Next up, Best Film Editing. We got five nominations. Sound of Metal, once again. The Trial of the Chicago 7. Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, and The Father. What are you choosing for this one? We've seen all of these.
This is really hard to remember the editing. I mean, Nomadland, they had to take all these scenes with these various people and put it together in a story. So I think that is pretty unique. Promising Young Woman, I don't really remember the editing. I mean, there's just some scenes, flashback scenes, but not memorable. The Father, it was kind of unique in the way, because he's going through dementia, and the movie's trying to give you the sense of that you're going in dementia too. So I think that would have been interesting from an editing standpoint. Sound of Metal, and The Trial of Chicago 7, I think there was a lot more back and forth and different things, so I will go Trial of Chicago 7.
This one's tough, because Trial of Chicago 7 could take it. I remember our episode, I said the mix of between scenes and using same sentences, I just think that was a standout for me. The Father, though, is great in its editing, in which what seems like a fluid scene is actually two different time periods for Anthony Hopkins, which putting yourself as Anthony Hopkins is as mind-deceptive as it is in the film, which makes it really strong. But I think the Sound of Metal with the editing kind of goes back to the sound mixing, the sound of the film, of how intense at least the kind of with Whiplash, the music scenes with him on the drums and how intense it could be. So I think I'm going to go Sound of Metal on this one. I could be wrong. This one's tight.
Yeah, if I had to actually vote, I think Nomadland will win because I think when you have a big movie that's going to win a lot of awards, I think it sort of gets swept up into some of these little awards. So I don't know. What you said about The Father, this is very hard.
I know.
This is one of the hardest categories. So I'm just going to stick Nomadland just as like a Ben-Hur type of thing where it's just going to win a lot of things.
All right, so we got Sound of Metal and Nomadland. Up next for Best Cinematography, I sadly do not have the names for these cinematographers, but the nominations are Nomadland, Mank, News of the World, Trial of Chicago 7, and Judas and the Black Messiah. I remember when we talked about when we were on our Mank episode, one of the highlights we said, Mank will win, or at least I said, Mank will win Best Cinematography, because I do love the cinematography. But now that we have seen all five films, who do you think will win?
Oh, Madeline.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, people are suckers for outdoor scenery.
I think...
The film people might love Mank, because it's such a, you know...
Film.
It's a Fincher. Yeah.
I don't know, this one's tough. I think I might also have to go Nomadland with the great scaping sceneries. But I think Mank cinematography should win. But I think Nomadland's going to take the cake. What is missing here, though, is the cinematography for Tenet. Not only was it filmed on IMAX 70mm film, which is hard to do, they filmed stuff backwards as well as forwards. The fight scene with John David Washington, they filmed that whole thing forwards, and they filmed it all backwards. Where the hell is Tenet's nomination?
Should it be in it should be in film editing, not cinema. Is that cinematography? I guess it is cinematography.
Yeah, because they physically had to film it twice and like make sure, like if they drop a bullet, if they catch a bullet, they film it with her dropping it, but then they have to stage it so it looks like she's catching it. That is grade A cinematography right there. Biggest snub right here. But anyway, we both have Nomadland. Up next, Best Production Design. The nominations are Mank, News of the World, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Tenet, and The Father. This one is also a bit tough.
Yeah,
because all of them have their perks.
I think definitely not The Father, because it takes place in one room.
I was going to say that for The Father, it changes, so it's a subtle production design. Like, pictures can change without you noticing.
Yeah, I mean, Tenet...
I don't think Tenet should be nominated.
I don't know. I think Tenet, it's more... I mean, there's different scenes, and, you know, the production... Does it, like, the crashing of the plane into the hangar, is that a production design? I don't know.
I was thinking more if it's the, like, the rooms of when the turnstile. I thought that was what they were going for, and I don't really agree with it, but oh well.
So, basically, we're down to the three historical pieces. I would have to go for Mank. I think they spent the most... They were very detailed in the way everything looked. Though people have done early Hollywood before. I mean, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, again, took place in three scenes, so not much work had to be done, even though it was very, like, the tense scene in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is, you know, the production design there was amazing. So I'm going to go Mank.
I will also go for Mank. News of the World, love a good Western. It does it well. It's just, you know, Mank, it felt like it went above and beyond as well as extremely accurate. And same as Ma Rainey, it's very detailed, but for three sets, pretty much. So, Mank, Best Production Design. Next up, we got Makeup and Hairstyling. The nominations are Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Emma, Mank, Hillbilly Elegy, and Pinocchio. Pinocchio.
Well, I haven't seen Pinocchio or Hillbilly Elegy, so I'm out. I can't give you an answer on that. Emma, it's a typical period piece. So the only one that's really interesting is Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, because obviously Viola Davis's hair makeup were very unique and something we've never seen really on screen before. But it was only one person who had the hair and makeup rather than a whole group of people, which was in Mank. So, or Emma. So I think Ma Rainey's going to win, but I would go with Mank. I think that's my vote.
As you, I've not seen Pinocchio or Hillbilly Elegy. Mank, I actually didn't think the makeup and hairstyling was that impressive. Emma, I think, is more costume-based. So I would say pretty much the Viola Davis Award, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom for Best Makeup and Hairstyling. I couldn't really think of anything that got snubbed. Maybe Birds of Prey with the Harley Quinn makeup and those characters, but that might be costume design, so not too sure on that one. Next up, documentary shorts. The nominations are A Concierto is a Conversation, A Love Song for Latasha, Hunger Ward, Colette, and Do Not Split. Have you seen any of these?
I have not.
I have not seen any of these either.
So usually, you know, when you these, you know, in the old days, you used to go for the Holocaust movie, but I don't think there is one. So I'm going to go with Hunger Ward, Sky Fitzgerald.
As you, I've not seen any of these, so I was doing some research and I came up with A Concierto is a Conversation. I have no real basis behind it. I saw what I saw and I'm choosing that one. So this one, I guess, is another wild card that we have no real placement in. All right, so before we move on, Dad, we are actually halfway through our list. So now this is actually the perfect time to take a break to hear a quick word from our sponsor, Anchor. So we're going to be taking a quick break and then we'll get right back to the show. Welcome back from the break, everybody. I am joined by Jeff Bergman. We just discussed Nomadland, which is currently in theaters as well as Hulu, and we are currently in our Oscars 2021 predictions. We are at documentary, best documentary, and the nominations are Time, Collective, My Octopus Teacher, Crip Camp, A Disability Revolution, and The Mole Agent. Who do you think's going to win?
Well, definitely not Collective. I don't think it's interesting enough. My Octopus's Teacher, we saw last night. Fascinating filming. A little self-centered. I don't know if it's going to win. Crip Camp was the one that was on Netflix the most, so I think it had the biggest chance to be watched, so I think that might win. The Mole Agent, also not interesting enough. And Time is one of these movies where, you know, people try to get someone who's in prison released. So I'd say it's between Time and Crip Camp. And I'll go with Crip Camp.
This one, the only one I've seen is My Octopus Teacher. I've heard of Crip Camp and Time. I've actually heard a lot of people say good things about Time. This one's kind of going on a whim. I'm going My Octopus Teacher. I think that the story is unique enough and the filming capability behind it was great. My only question is, where's Boy State? I thought Boy State as a documentary 100% snubbed. I thought if that was nominated, it would have taken the win, but it can't because it wasn't even nominated. All right, so we have My Octopus Teacher and which one did you say? Crip Camp?
Crip Camp.
All right. Next up, original score. We got Soul, Minari, Mank, News of the World, and Da Five Bloods. One thing to note is that Soul and Mank are both composed by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. And then also Soul is additionally scored by Jean-Baptiste from Late Show with Stephen Colbert. So who do you think is going to take the cake?
Well, not the Five Bloods.
I usually have listened to all these. I've not listened at all to the Five Bloods.
You know, Minari's score was, I think, interesting. News of the World, I remember we talked about maybe the score in that one.
We didn't do that episode.
Oh, we didn't do that episode?
No.
Okay. But that was like, you know, kind of a Western issue. So yeah, it's going to be between Soul and Mank.
So between the same person.
Yeah. And so I'm going to go with Soul.
I am also going to go with Soul. As much as I appreciated the historical accuracy of Mank, Soul is just, it's won pretty much all of the best score awards. And one thing to note back to our Soul episode with Brandon, one thing he noted that ever since he said this, I said that's genius, is that every time they're in the Soul world, it has this very
It has
a very out of world type music, very synth based, and then when it's in the real world, it is strictly jazz. So because of that, simply, Soul is gonna win, and also it's been winning all the awards. Next up, best original song. Now I don't have the films attached to these names. I know a couple of them. So the nominations are "Speak Now" from One Night in Miami, Husavik from Eurovision, "Hear My Voice" from I believe it's Judas and the Black Messiah, "Fight for You," and "Scene," IOC. I don't know those two films.
I think one of them is from the Sophia Loren movie, isn't it?
Yes, I believe so. I've listened to Husavik. I've listened to "Speak Now" from One Night in Miami. I've heard "Hear My Voice." What do you think of these?
Definitely not going to be Husavik, I don't think. It's going to be between "Fight for You" and "Speak Now." And I think Leslie Odom Jr. is so hot right now, I would just go "Speak Now."
I will also say "Speak Now" from One Night in Miami. It's Leslie Odom Jr. As you said, he's hot right now. Hamilton, it is a good song and a great performance. What I want to win, I want Husavik to win. Because it is important to the story of Eurovision. The singer is really good. And also, wouldn't it be great if we had a Will Ferrell Academy Award winning film? that concept would be genius.
I just want a Will Ferrell performance on the Oscars.
Like him performing the song?
Yeah.
I think, because he's technically in the song a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that he is going to be performing part of the song, Husavik. That will be incredible. Please, please, Will Ferrell, sing the song. One thing that I will say that I think was snubbed, I was going to go into a bit later with the animated feature film. There's this one movie called Over the Moon. It is an Asian cultured centered film on Netflix. Animated. It is pretty much a knockoff Disney film, but it's an animated musical about a young girl trying to go to the moon, and they have a bunch of original songs. Rocket to the Moon should have been nominated. It's the I Want Disney song. It's a great song. I don't know why it's not nominated. Over the Moon, it's my plug, I guess, for this show.
They always have the worst songs nominated in our original songs. There's so many great songs that were in a bunch of movies that should have been nominated, and so I always feel that they always screw this up.
Next up, Best Costume Design. The nominations are Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Emma, Mank, Mulan, and Pinocchio.
Again, I didn't see Mulan and Pinocchio. Again, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, the costumes, her costume and the costume in the tent scene is memorable. But Emma is Emma, you know, period piece. Those are always hard. And then there's Mank, and so
this one's tough.
I'm going to go with Mank again.
This one, I think because of, as you said, the tent scene and especially Viola Davis's dress, I'm going to go Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I could be wrong. I really want Emma. I want Emma to just have the random win. Because also the one thing I remember from that film is that the costumes were great. I think they were vibrant, very unique. What didn't get nominated? I would have liked a Birds of Prey to get nominated. Looking at their designs, especially Harley's outfits that are very Hot Topic-esque, they're very unique. So I would have said put Birds of Prey on here.
Well, what about the 80s costumes from Wonder Woman?
Nah. Too basic.
The ones that Chris Pine were in. Those were pretty cool.
Too basic for me. Next up, we got original screenplay. I'll try to do this from memory with the people. I don't have the names on them right now. But we have Promising Young Woman by Emerald Fennell. We have Trial of Chicago 7 by Aaron Sorkin. We have Minari by Lee Isaac Chung. Sound of Metal, I'm not too sure on the writer's name. And then we have Judas and the Black Messiah, who I'm pretty sure Shaka King helped write this. There might be some other writers with that. Who would you say has taken this award?
This is a hard category because there are, I think all five of these can easily win. That's how competitive this category is. Originally, I would say Trial of Chicago 7 because it's Sorkin, and Sorkin is, you know, well done. But Judas and the Black Messiah, I mean, there was some great dialogue in that movie. And the Minari had some interesting little, cute little quips and things like that. It's hard, you know, there's this whole fight between old Hollywood, new Hollywood, you know, and you see in the last couple of years that new Hollywood's sort of taken over a little bit with Moonlight winning Best Picture. So normally I would say Trial of Chicago 7, but we're at Judas and the Black Messiah. I'm going to play it safe and go Trial of Chicago 7.
I'm going completely opposite from you. The one film you haven't mentioned, Promising Young Woman, I think Emerald Fennell's writing debut for a film that has some very unique ideas, but really just over the last 4 months has stirred up a conversation because of the story and the character beats and a lot of the themes. As we said, there's no first feature award on this. I think she would take the first feature award this year, but because it doesn't exist, I'm going for Promising Young Woman. But I could see Trial Chicago 7 because it's Aaron Sorkin, but he's won already. So I say Promising Young Woman, Emerald Fennell. Next up, we got Best Foreign Language Film, even though I'm pretty sure it should be Best International Film. I don't know why that's not changed on this list. But anyway, the nominations are Another Round, Quo Vadis Aida. I'm so sorry if I mispronounced that, which I probably did. The Man Who Sold His Skin, Collective, and Better Days. Out of these, what do you think will win?
Well, the only one we saw was Another Round, and I think it's the most popular and probably will win, though Collective is nominated for foreign language and also documentary, so it's in
I didn't even think of that.
It's in two places, and I don't really know. We should really watch these other movies this week, but I'll go Another Round.
I am also going to go Another Round. While Collective is nominated in another category, I think the director of Another Round being nominated for Best Director is the selling point. I think because of that, Another Round will win. Next up for Best Animated Feature Film, probably the category that you are 100% sure of because you have seen every single one of these films. We got the nominations of Soul, Wolfwalkers, Over the Moon, Onward, and a Shaun the Sheep movie, Farmageddon as the master of best animated films, who do you think will win?
What the hell are you talking about? You're the master of animated feature film. It's only down to two. It's either Soul or Wolfwalkers. Now, Wolfwalkers has this like cool vibe to it, and people like go to independent movies. But I think Soul is too big and popular and too well done to not win. So Soul.
Yeah, it was a joke that you have only seen Soul from this category. When I've seen all of these except Shaun the Sheep, I mean, Wolfwalkers could definitely take the cake because it is international. It has a beautiful, unique, something I've never seen before, style of 2D animation. But Soul, Pixar, it's also nominated for a bunch of other awards. Soul should win, and it probably will win. All right, we're getting into the acting categories now. The first one up is Best Supporting Actress, one that I think has had so many frontrunners, I don't even know at this point. The nominations are Maria Bakalova for Borat's subsequent movie film, Olivia Colman, The Father, Yoo Jung-yung for Minari, Amanda Seyfried for Mank, and Glenn Close for Hillbilly Elegy.
This is probably the worst category of all the acting categories. I think these performances are just okay. Nobody really was great. We could probably find five other actresses who did just as good a job that are not listed here, especially the people from Judas and the Black Messiah. Listen, so Yoon Jung-won has won the Screen Actors Guild and the BAFTAs.
Yes.
Maria Bakalova won. Didn't she win the Golden Globes?
Well, technically, she won the Golden Globes, but it was for Best Actress in a Comedy. She wasn't nominated for Best Supporting Actress at the Golden Globes. But
so
she won
Best... Was it Jodie Foster? No.
It was Jodie Foster.
Yeah, so, I mean, that pissed me off because I think that movie, The Mauritanian, was totally snubbed from the Oscars, and it was a really good movie.
Jodie Foster wasn't even nominated, and she won the Golden Globes.
I mean, she should have been nominated. Better than...
Amanda.
Yeah, better than Amanda. Well, here's my prediction. I think because Glenn Close has been snubbed so many times that she has enough pull in Hollywood that she's going to win.
Really?
Because the rest of the category is so weak, and I think it's just time for her. So I'm going to go with... that the Academy is going to throw her solid.
For Hillbilly Elegy,
which I haven't seen, but I just think the other people are so weak. They're like Olivia Colman's Olivia Colman. She talks like she's in The Crown. And the grandmother from Minari, all right, she was okay. You know, she was good, but I mean, was she great? Amanda Seyfried was playing like a simple character. Glenn Close.
Do you think there was anyone that should have been nominated that wasn't? Jodie Foster, I guess.
Jodie Foster, the girl, you know, the two girls from Judas and the Black Messiah.
Dominique Fishback.
And the one who was in the Panthers.
I think that there's definitely a weak spot from this year. Because as I was saying, there was a bunch of high and lows. Amanda Seyfried was the front runner for a bit. And then, as you said, with the grandmother from Minari winning the Screen Actor Guilds and then just winning the BAFTAs, I think because of this wave, and I think Minari's been getting a lot of hype since it's been on demand, I think she's going to win. Personally, out of these five, I think Maria Bakalova should win because she had to convince everyone, tons of random strangers, that she is this foreign daughter that doesn't know a thing about American culture. I think she should easily win supporting actress, but for some reason, there's no hype around her. So I would love it if Maria won, but I think Yoo Jung-yun is going to win, and I think Dominique Fishback should have been nominated for Judas. Either for Amanda Seyfried's slot or Glenn Close. But going on, moving forward, next up for Best Supporting Actor, we have five nominations: Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah, Sacha Baron Cohen for Trial of Chicago 7, Leslie Odom Jr. for One Night in Miami, Paul Raci for Sound of Metal, and in the surprise slot, Lakeith Stanfield for Judas and the Black Messiah. Who do you think's going to win?
There's no contest. I mean, Daniel Kaluuya has won every award show this year, so it's a slam dunk.
Yeah, I also say Daniel Kaluuya. My only concern is that potentially the votes could be split for two Judas slots, even though I still don't understand why Lakeith is on here. I think he's best actor in the film. But yeah, Daniel Kaluuya, he has won, as you said, every single award so far. So no competition. Supporting actor, Daniel Kaluuya. Next up, Best Adapted Screenplay. We have five nominations: Nomadland, The Father, Borat's subsequent movie film, One Night in Miami, and The White Tiger. What do you think's going
to
win?
Well, I mean, Nomadland's been winning, though. I don't think the screenplay is... The Father really should deserve to win, I think. The Father is just a well-done, cleverly written movie, and I just think it deserves something, and I think it really should deserve adapted screenplay over Nomadland, which is... I don't know.
Even though The Father is based on a play?
That's okay. That's why it's adapted screenplay.
You're right.
Or I would say it's either The Father or One Night in Miami, because there's a lot of dialogue in One Night in Miami. And I think I would choose one of those two over Nomadland, even though Nomadland will probably win. But who deserves to win?
Yeah, out of these five, who would you think?
The Father. I mean, I don't know. The One Night in Miami script is pretty intense and pretty interesting. I mean, the speeches that Malcolm X does are really powerful, but I'm going to go with The Father.
For me, I think just given on who has been winning, I think it's going to be Chloe Zhao for Nomadland. Who do I think should win? Kind of forgot about it, but One Night in Miami, I did forget about how engrossed I was in just their conversations in the hotel room. Could it be because of the direction by Regina King? Maybe, but I think that dialogue, the script also had a good part in that. So personally, I would say One Night in Miami, but from the way it's going, Chloe Zhao for Nomadland. Next up, probably my favorite category of who will win Best Actress. The nominations are Carey Mulligan for Promising Young Woman, Andra Day for The United States versus Billie Holiday, Frances McDormand for Nomadland, Viola Davis for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and Vanessa Kirby for Pieces of a Woman. Now, one thing to note, Carey Mulligan won for the Best Critic Choice Award for Best Actress. Andra Day won the Best Actress at the Golden Globes. Frances McDormand won for Best Actress at the BAFTAs, and Viola Davis won for Best Actress at the Screen Actor Guild. Sadly, Vanessa Kirby has not won a single award, but none of these actresses have repeated. So really, I have no idea.
Yeah, this is the most fascinating of all the awards. It is the most hotly contested.
The only thing to note, really, is that the Screen Actor Guild voting body, who are 100% actors, they're the ones voting in the Oscars for the actors as well. So there could be a heavy overlap.
They vote for everybody.
Yeah, but there could be still a heavy overlap since Viola Davis did win at the Screen Actor Guilds into the Oscars. So could Viola take it, or is it the Nomadland year? Or is it Vanessa Kirby? Granted, we have not seen Vanessa Kirby in Pieces of a Woman.
I am going to play a theory. You know, you have to guess on what the... I'm going to say that Andra Day and Viola Davis might split a vote, and I'm going to go Carey Mulligan.
This could be wrong, but I definitely want Carey Mulligan to win, but I think when I look back at Promising Young Woman, that performance is, like, she is the star. I think that she is the movie. Without her, it really doesn't work as well. She is a force. She is great in the role. I personally would say Carey Mulligan. I could be wrong on that one. It could just be Frances McDormand, which I would not agree with. If it was up for me, I would have had Elizabeth Moss in this category for The Invisible Man, once again. But also one film that I recently watched, Malcolm and Marie, technically the COVID quarantine film with John David Washington and Zendaya. I think she should be nominated. There was one scene where I was flat out jaw-dropped that she was able to do. So personally, I would put Zendaya in this category. But the film did not get enough hype. Next up, we got Best Act.
Oh, I thought, what's her name? Who won? The movie that you didn't like? The movie about the lawyer and the insurance case.
I care a lot. Rosamund Pike.
She was really good. She should have been nominated. I mean, Vanessa Kirby's been nominated everywhere, and she doesn't win. And Rosamund Pike, didn't she win?
She won Best Actress in a Comedy or Musical at the Golden Globes.
She was really... That was a really underrated movie. I like that movie.
Oh, then maybe Maria didn't win, because Rosamund Pike won in that category.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Maria, she won. Maybe it was the Critics' Choice Awards. But moving on to Best Actor, the nominations are Chadwick Boseman for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Anthony Hopkins for The Father, Riz Ahmed for Sound of Metal, Stephen Young for Minari, and Gary Oldman for Mank.
Well, it's too bad. I feel bad for Anthony Hopkins and Riz Ahmed, because either one of them deserve this the most, because they were the stars of the movie. I mean, Chadwick Boseman really was almost a supporting actor, I thought, than a lead in this. But they put him in lead, I guess, because that's where it worked out. So he's going to win because he's won everything else.
Except the BAFTAs.
The BAFTAs, right. Anthony Hopkins won. I think that Anthony Hopkins' performance is truly amazing. Any other year he would have won. Or Riz Ahmed, one of the two. They were both fantastic. But you got to go with the way it's going. So Chadwick Boseman.
I'm going to go Chadwick Boseman. But who would I want to win? I'd want The Father, Anthony Hopkins. I think he really deserves it. If you haven't watched The Father, it's not the easiest watch. but I think he's the best performer. And best directing, best director. We got Chloe Zhao for Nomadland, Emerald Fennell for Promising Young Woman. We got David Fincher for Mank. We got Lee Isaac Chung for Minari. And we got the director of Another Round, who I do not have his name up right now. But we have seen all five of these. Best director. Who do you think's going to win?
Well, Chloe Zhao's won every one, so I think she'll win.
I also think Chloe Zhao is going to win for Nomadland. I think while I do love Emerald Fennell for her debut, I think that Chloe Zhao being able to get those great performances from Swanky and all the other supporting nomads who are real people, I think that is dedication, as well as her balancing Nomadland and the start of the Eternals and everything with that. So I'm as well going with the waves right now, Chloe Zhao for Nomadland. I just looked it up. Another Round is directed by Thomas Vinterberg, who sadly I do not think is going to win, but still, check out Another Round. It's on Hulu. And Dad, it is the moment. This is the big question. Who will win Best Picture? Out of 10 possible nominations, there were 8 this year. We have The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, Minari, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and The Trial of the Chicago 7. Who will win the Best Picture of 2021 Oscars?
Well, the two movies that I enjoyed the most were Judas and the Black Messiah and Trial of the Chicago 7. Though I enjoyed all of them, actually. I thought those two I really enjoyed the most. And I thought The Father was fascinating. You know, I think with Promising Young Woman, I don't want to ruin the end, but if the end would have ended up differently, I think it would have been like, if it was a more satisfying ending. Oh, people think it's satisfying. I don't. So I would have liked to have the movie end another way. But
yeah.
But listen, Nomadland has pretty much won every award, right?
For Screen Actor Guild for Best Cast, which is technically Best Picture, that was Trial of the Chicago 7. Nomadland won BAFTA's drama at the Golden Globes.
Critics' Choice.
I don't remember. I think it won Critics' Choice. Pretty much it's won every single award. The only thing that is, what could be an upset? It could be a La La Land Moonlight situation in pretty much, or a Green Book or Roma situation. And what happens is, these 8 films, instead of just people voting who they want to win, they have to rank the films, and then their points are calculated one out of one, one out of two, one out of three. It's a kind of a complicated situation, but what could happen is that if Nomadland, per se, gets a lot of love and it gets a lot of ones, but it also gets a lot of eights, so then it gets only 1/8 added, then it can kind of lower it when if Trial Chicago 7, which is voted second all across the board, like Green Book, that could technically win Best Picture, even though more people would post Nomadland as their number one, more people would put it as their number 8. I don't hear any hate of Nomadland, kind of with Roma, because it was a Netflix film, potentially, but something like that could happen. Minari is very consistent in its love. Judas could have an upset. This is tough. It looks like Nomadland, but really Minari, Judas, Trial could take it.
Yeah, I agree. If I had to pick an upset, I would even throw The Father in there. That The Father is so memorable.
These films are really well received. I would think Mank is the only one that has any real backlash towards it.
Yeah.
Minari's been
the problem
with
Judas and the Black Messiah, there was a lot of anti-cop stuff in there. And some people like that, but some people don't. So I think that might prevent it from winning. Trial of Chicago 7 is a classic Oscar movie. And if there's a lot of people going different places, it could end up winning, you know, because the Best Picture kind of sometimes gets messed up with. But I can't see Nomadland not winning. I mean, even though I didn't think it was the Best Picture, but it's won everything else. And it's won, I mean, it didn't win the SAGs, but the SAG is more of an acting award. And that's the other thing, though. There wasn't a lot of great acting in Nomadland, so.
Yeah, this one's tough. I think I'm just going to roll with the punches and say Nomadland. Something could change in the next 2 weeks. There can be a bunch of random love for Minari, and it can ride the Parasite hype from last year. Or, Judas and the Black Messiah, I would say, I think should win. But really, over the last month or two, it's no longer on HBO Max. It's only in theaters. No one's been talking about it, I feel like. I haven't really been hearing that much Twitter buzz about it. But Trial, Promising Young Woman, Nomadland, Minari have been making big waves online. So, gonna go Nomadland. Judas should win. Was there anyone that wasn't nominated that you think should have been nominated? Because there are 2 slots.
The Mauritanian?
Really? I would say Soul should have been nominated.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really it. Where the hell is Soul? Nominate an animated film. It's been since Toy Story 3, 10 years ago, 11 years ago. Nominate an animated film. This was the choice. It's actually very interesting because, as we know, in 2009, the Oscars changed in which they opened up Best Picture to 10 films, and you could do up to 10 films. But this is actually the last year in which, starting next year, there will be 10 films no matter what. So we will get another District 9, potentially, or a Soul, hopefully. But this is the last year that there will be less than 10 nominations. So do you choose Nomadland?
Yes, I do.
I also choose Nomadland, but once again, this could change. And Dad, after an 8-month, 7-month series, we have finished the Academy Award season for 2020. How are you feeling?
I'm excited. I can't, you know, we'll be having our sushi and our ice cream already for the big night and the drink and the drinks and the wine. So we're excited for it.
I'm very excited. It feels weird because a lot of the Best Picture films, they don't feel as, in a way, big as some other years. Like last year we had Joker and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood in 1917, three humongous films. When this year we got a bunch of streaming films. But I'm still excited. Of course, I don't know. This season I feel like is very tough for a couple of categories. But once again, I'm always excited for a surprise. I hope there's no upset like Mank winning Best Picture. But overall, I'm excited. And Dad, once again, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I had a blast talking about Nomadland and going through our Oscar nominations. And audiences, once again, if you don't know, you can actually support the show Mr. Movie because, as we said, Anthony Anderson and Tracy Ellis Ross are going to be hosting our Oscars, and they don't come cheaply. So you can actually help donate to support them hosting the Oscars. You could go to anchor.fm/Joshua-Bergman/support to donate $10, $5, or just $1 a month. Again, that is anchor.fm/Joshua-Bergman/support. I'm telling you, we need these guys to host the awards. Dad, once again, thank you so much for joining me. And audiences, thank you so much for listening, and we hope you tune in next time.